Hi, this is Superman, and you need more front wing.
Hello and welcome to another More Front Wing podcast. I'm Steph Walcraft, joined by co-editor Paul Dalby, and today we're joined also by Zachary Houghton of IndyCar Advocate and another fellow contributor to IndyCar Nation, joining Paul and I as the one of the writers for the IndyCar fan website. So, Zach, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Well, thanks for having me again, guys.
Really appreciate it. Yeah, great to have you back for a full episode this time, as opposed to just a snippet, which is very nice. We welcome you. So let's talk about Mid-Ohio, and then we're going to go over a couple of just quick news points from the week, and then we'll look ahead to the race at Loudoun this coming weekend. So let's start by talking about Mid-Ohio and a bit more general terms. Paul and I have already outlined our arguments for what we thought of the way that things went on Sunday, with me saying that this was all in our article that we submitted this week to IndyCar Nation, with me saying that I felt that it was not the most exciting race of the year, clearly, but it was a little underappreciated. There were a lot of things to like, I thought. Paul, I believe, was bored to tears.
That's putting it nicely.
Yeah. So let's let Zach get his thoughts in here, and maybe he can sway the opinions one way or another.
Sure. You know, with Mid-Ohio, you kind of know what you're getting up front, I always think.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to overuse the term, but it is a gorgeous facility. And, you know, it's got this wonderful tradition of IndyCar fans. And now comes the dreaded having said that. A lot of times there's just not a lot of on-track passing. But I did feel that this year was a little bit less of a snooze fest on one of what's traditionally, I think, as far as actual racing goes, one of the weaker links in the schedule. I really felt like there were some different strategies at play. Obviously, I think it was helped a lot by James Hinchcliffe's off-strategy, I would not really say gamble, but piece of luck that worked out for him, and we saw him lead a good amount of laps, which was really neat to see a rookie up there before Dixon, of course, reasserted things, and they went from there. One of the cool things I thought, one of the stories that kind of got swept under the rug a little bit, is the continued resurgence of Ryan Hunter-Reay. You know, this is a guy who a lot of us thought would be challenging every road race earlier in the year, and that just had not happened until the last few races. And here he is with another podium, and just kind of sneaks in there.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really realize it until afterwards. It's like, oh, that's neat. So yeah, there were some different things going on, and I don't know if you're the casual fan who tunes into that race, how much of it you caught. It's kind of one of those tough things where if I'm tuning in and I'm maybe a casual IndyCar fan, well, I see Scott Dixon ahead by 6 seconds. You know, and I kind of wonder, I guess I'll put it to you guys, how much of that do you think translated to your just casual viewer as far as what's going on?
I didn't get to see it on TV, really, because I was there, so I'm not sure I'm the right person to ask. Paul, what do you think?
Oh, okay.
Well, I would say very, very little. If there was excitement, very little of it translated to what I saw on TV.
Being there, maybe it was the fact that I was listening to the radios and sort of really, really entrenched in everything that was going on, but I felt like I was being kept plenty busy. And had enough storylines to follow. But, I mean, of those storylines, how many of them would be something that would make sense to the casual fan? I'm not really sure. I think the onus, though, to make sure that those storylines come to the attention of the casual fan falls to the television announcers. And I can't say whether they did that because I didn't get to see much of the television broadcast. But if casual fans are not getting these storylines and having these interesting things brought to their attention, that falls on them, in my opinion.
Well, going at what you just said there, just a week or two ago when we were talking about the Edmonton race, I think a lot of people, and I think you and I agreed on this, was that the TV had gone too far in building up this rivalry between Will Power and Dario Franchitti, that it seemed fake because it was something like, you know, the TV was kind of doing like their hallmark on this situation where it didn't exist. I mean, there was some tension there, but probably not necessarily to the level that the broadcast wanted to make it seem like.
Right, but that's the kind of thing that the casual fan was going to pick up on anyway. They really didn't need to drive that point into the ground. Something like Hinch and his team pulling off that excellent little bit of combination, I would say, Zach, of gambling and good luck. That's the kind of thing that might be lost on somebody that was tuning in for one of the first times that should have been explained in greater detail.
Well, I think that part came through. I mean, I think they did a good job explaining and helping the casual viewer understand just exactly how lucky Hinchcliffe was there. I think what I kept getting frustrated with him in that situation is they kept talking about how he was really off sequence. He was only off sequence by about 2 laps.
He really wasn't. No, because everybody came in on that same yellow.
Yeah, I mean, he pitted, and I mean, it wasn't, 15, 20 seconds later, the full course yellow came out?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it wasn't really sealed for him. Well, you know, he had that late rookie mistake, but he lost about a second in the pits. And that's really what put him behind the Ganassi cars. It wasn't that he was terribly off sequence and everything, and I think they played that up a little too much. One thing I also noticed from the TV coverage is, when's the last time we actually got through an entire through the field? I mean, that says something about the race if they're actually able to get through an entire one without Masato or EJ Vizo or Sebastian Saavedra hitting something. I mean, I was like, I was waiting for it because they just kept going back and forth. Okay, over to you, Lindy. Okay, Vitor Mira has been tooling around. And I was like, okay, any minute now they're going to cut out of it. No, we got through an entire through the field. That is a pretty sedate sign right there as far as your race goes. But,
very true, and I hadn't even thought of that, but I wish I would have used that as part of my argument.
you want that. You want to get back to about 8th place, maybe 9th or something, and then, oh, you know, you got to hear those tandem O sounds, you know, the General Harold Sebastian Saavedra or Paul Tracy or EJ Vizo doing what they do. But that didn't happen. Very odd.
You mentioned EJ. Let's talk about that incident that saw him put damage on, what was it, at least 2 other cars. That was the incident that sent Hildebrand toward the back and put him several laps down. And I think Elio Castroneves was involved in that as well. That took place in a part of the course that was it was dictated in the drivers' meeting as being an area of the circuit to follow the car in front of you. That I got directly from the notes from the drivers' meeting, and yet there was no call. There was no call for avoidable contact. There was no even discussion of review that I heard on the radio. Is this more inconsistency that we're seeing, or did you guys feel that it was a racing incident?
I think the inconsistent part for me, whether or not you wanted to call the penalty, as you said, there was never even any mention that it was looked at. At least I don't recall there being. Very early on, in fact, the first lap when Hinch got sent off into the grass and kind of got pushed out there by Tagliani, I mean, it was obviously a concerted effort for Versus to relay that race control had told them they had looked at the replay, they had investigated the situation, and that there would be no penalty on Alex Tagliani
now
in that situation.
Let me shed some light on that, because I was on the radio for that as well. The team went to the Hinchcliffe's team went to race control and asked them to review that situation. So that might be why we heard about that.
They lodged
a complaint on the radio with them. Race control got back and said, okay, we're going to take a look at it. We'll get back to you. And then the news came out that, no, it was going to be deemed a racing incident. Nobody actually called out the Vizo incident for review.
Right. And remember, though, that Tagliani was on probation going into this. So maybe the review, it could have been part from Newman Haas requesting the review, Or it could have been that they were actually taking a closer look at it because it involved Alex Tagliani, who was on probation.
My sense from listening to it was that it was because of the team's request that it was mentioned on the radio. But that being said, Tony Kotman told us, Paul, in his interview a couple weeks ago, you might recall, that every situation is reviewed in race control, whether it's mentioned on the radio or not. So I think maybe the TV crews just didn't mention it as having been reviewed because it wasn't mentioned on the radio, but that it probably was looked at to some degree at least.
Mm.
Anyway, my feeling was that if they're going to be telling people in the driver's meeting that there are places where you can attempt to pass and there are places where you shouldn't attempt to pass, or, you know, the wording is, it has various amounts of strength, but it was pretty clear in this instance that they were not wanting people to attempt passes in that portion of the circuit. I think that there needs to be some consistency in how calls are going to be made. And, I mean, that was another one of those situations where Vizo did damage to two other cars and really didn't take any sort of a penalty, any sort of a setback himself.
That's right.
And, how is that,
you know, fair? One of the other things, oh, yeah. And, you know, one of the other things to look at is they're looking at, you know, when we had these probation penalties handed out last week, or probation leading to penalties, or however it is, we looked at specifically, you know, this was a chain of events. It wasn't Hunter Ray just nudging someone in one race. It was a couple of events put together. Now, you look at E.J. Vizo, and now you can argue maybe some of them happened earlier in the season, but it's been pretty consistent that E.J.'s had some run-ins. I mean, there was the Scott Dixon incident where Dixon was ready to go back out there and take him out.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of have to wonder, with a legacy like that, is IndyCar going to – I mean, is there still a chance we hear something on this? Is it –
It's almost like they've given up. Like, they don't even bother anymore.
It's just punishment enough having EJ Vizo drive right now. I don't know if they're just teaching them a lesson, or I don't know. But it's frustrating. It's always frustrating with EJ because you see these flashes of true speed, and you know, every once in a while he'll just do something that's like, wow. But it's almost always the other way instead.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just it continues to compile and just get more frustrating, I'm sure, for the team and the fans as the season goes on. And when you see I guess you could call it a no call over the races like this, you wonder, yeah, maybe they're just resigned to the fact that EJ Vizo is here and this is what he's going to do.
Yeah, it this is only sort of related, but I was thinking ahead this week, of course, with the testing of the 2012 car, and we're going to get to that in a bit, but I was thinking to myself, one thing that we're definitely going to have to discuss leading into the beginning of next season is who's going to be the first driver to tear one of the new cars up, and that name definitely is toward the top of the list of the prime suspects, I would think, if he even manages to find his way back at all. We'll see. I mean, EJ is a good guy to have around. He's a character. He's as you said, he has his moments where he's fast, and he seems to be an integral enough part of that team, and Jimmy Vassar continues to back him. But, yeah, it's a bizarre little situation, definitely. Let's talk about Justin Wilson and the incident that led to his back injury that now has him sitting out the rest of the season. What a bizarre incident. It was one of those ones that, these happen once in a while, but it looked so innocent. Like, I mean, he seemed himself to think that there wasn't anything awful about it until he actually physically tried to get out of the car and realized how much pain he was suddenly in. But, I mean, it's been explained several times that it's just the fact that he's so tall means that he's got so much less padding underneath the seat, so that he'll fit into the cockpit, so there's less to absorb the energy of a direct vertical impact like what happened to Justin on Saturday morning. So it's unfortunate. It's bad luck. Dario Frank Keating mentioned in one of the press conferences that he's talked to the owners of Mid-Ohio, the new owners, Green Savory Promotions, as to look at that area as being one of the ones that's unsafe. People after the incident were all overlooking at it, saying that the it's clear that the grass and the portions of the circuit that are used for alternate layouts are not at all flush in that area, and that likely contributed to the problem. But I mean, we can analyze it all we want. Justin's out for the rest of the year. And I guess the only other thing that I have to say about that is that Dreyer and Reinbold is getting a little bit too good at having to find replacement drivers. Can we stop having them having to do that, please? That would really be great.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. Just how frustrating. I mean, not the season that Dreyer and Reinbold wanted at all, I think goes without saying, but you had Bia snap her wrist, Wilson with his earlier injury. Going back to last year, you had Conway's horrific accident. I mean, and, you know, now, let alone Justin Wilson, who's one of the nicest guys that you will meet around IndyCar out for the season, a guy who's, you know, regarded as really one of the best road racers, who's just had about the worst luck I've seen for a driver this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just really, if you think of his season, it has just been a real disappointment for a guy who's extremely well-regarded by the other drivers as well for his talent and just for what he can do. But yeah, it's just now we have to go through the entire process of who's running when, who's going to be in the seat for this, and it's a headache, and it's, you know, it's, I'm sure it's no fun for the team either, but now it's time for musical chairs again, probably.
Mm-hmm. Paul, any thoughts?
Well, I was actually surprised that that Thomas Schechter will be in that ride this weekend, just kind of expanding on what Zachary, where he was going there. I really thought they were going to try to be a little bit more consistent through the rest of the year, and instead of, as was mentioned, playing that musical chairs that they did last year, the new driver week in and week out, I think it would have been really good for them to just find one driver and stick with him. I thought that would be Simone Pagenaud. I thought he performed excellent all weekend under pretty difficult circumstances with, you know, essentially just jumping right in that car and getting ready to go qualifying. I thought he did a fantastic job this weekend.
As far as I know, Simone has no oval experience, though. Like zero.
Well, no, but that kind of leads into, you know, 2012, if he does, in fact, end up with the Sam Schmidt Motorsports ride, you know, he's going to need to pick up some oval experience at some point.
So why would Dreyer and Reinbold pay, you know, to potentially have cars torn up or at least have them take a beating so that some other team can benefit from the experience that he would get from them?
If you want to bring your car home in one piece and that's your main concern, Thomas Schechter isn't the guy you...
Fair enough.
I mean, but it'll be a fun ride while it lasts.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you're looking at the guy, just bring it home and run competitive on the ovals. I mean, you've got Townsend Bell that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to be fair, Paul Tracy is probably...
Wow. I'm shocked to hear you put
Paul's a pretty smart guy. He knows that he's not what he was 20 years ago, and I think he understands now how to bring a car home.
If they had gone with Paul Tracy, they'd have the only driver in the field that actually had driven at Loudon before, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah.
That's a good point. I was going through the field the other day, and I thought, wow, you know, it's kind of a level playing field as far as that.
It is, very much so. I think Dario's been there in Cup, hasn't he?
I think so.
I think you're right. I think he was there. Danica was there in Nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
But none of them have actually driven an open wheel car there, as far as I know.
No, not other than who was there for the test? I think Power and Dario, weren't they?
Maybe.
But yeah, as in terms of in race condition,
yeah,
I don't believe there's anybody that's been there in an Indy car except for Paul Tracy.
Yeah. That would have been very fun to watch. But anyhow, neither here nor there. Back to the original point, which was the seat hopping at Dreyer and Reinbold in, to replace Justin Wilson.
Yeah, I just think I hope that they find a driver that can bring some consistency for the rest of the year. I don't think it does them that much good to hire Schechter for a race and Pagenaud for a race and Paul Tracy for a race and, you know, whoever else they may have coming along to fill those seats in the remaining five or six races this year. I think from that team, they suffered so much last year with that that seat hopping. And I think this year they were finally starting to gain some momentum a little bit in these last few races. If they can just find someone to continue that and they can really move forward and provide some consistency for that team, I think they're going to be better off and help them close on a more positive note than just bouncing around from driver to driver at this point.
Well, I'm going to completely disagree with you. There's a big shock. They've got nothing to learn at this point. This car is going to – any data that they gather from this car is going to be useless in about 3 months. They don't have a need to hire any new drivers for next year as far as we know. So the best thing that they can do, as far as I'm concerned, is take the drivers that are going to bring the most money with them so they can stock up and have more money to have in the coffers going into 2012. Doesn't make any sense. Go ahead, Zach.
You know, I'm curious. Oh, I'm just going to say, I'm curious to see if this is the team where we see those couple of lights drivers get that one shot. You know, if we are going to musical chair hop, who's to say that Brandon Wagner or, you know, one of those lights guys doesn't bring enough money for that one race, you know, to get that one time on the track.
At that stage, why not?
Yeah, I mean, it could happen. I mean, you know, Bia got some races last year at the end. Of course, that parlayed into she came back full-time this year. But there are a number of lights drivers and kind of guys just kind of circling, as there always are. There's never a lack for, you know, drivers with the will. It's just the cash. So.
Well, the other thing is,
I guess we'll see what they come up with.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that Dreyer and Reinbold is one of those teams that we would all look at and not be surprised if they ended up with three or even four cars toward the end of the year as the car counts climb up, because they've got quite a few tubs sitting around that are also going to be worthless in about 3 months. So might as well put people in them and run them in the meantime. Why not? So that would be one of the teams that we would definitely expect to do that. So we may see a whole lot of different drivers getting a shot with them in the next little while. Let's talk about Scott Dixon finally getting the monkey off his back for the first time this season. This is the deepest that he's gone into a season since 2007 without a win, and definitely comes as a huge surprise. But, I mean, it's hard to look at it as anything but another one of those hard luck situations, possibly to rival the description of Justin Wilson's season that you gave a little bit earlier.
Oh, yeah. Dixon, I think we've all been kind of just stunned that he hasn't won a race by now.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like, he has had some bad luck. He had EJ Vizo bad luck, you know, while on the Canadian swing. And he's been close this year, just hasn't ever quite happened. There were the competing strategies at Indy, neither of which worked out for Ganassi. It's been just a very strange season as far as that goes. But, you know, I don't think anyone's ever looked at Scott Dixon, at least I haven't, and said, okay, maybe he's slipping a little bit. Maybe he doesn't have that touch. It's just like, well, he'll get his. It just hasn't happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's hard to say anybody is going to be going an awfully long time without a win when they're in a Target Jeep Ganassi car. So.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Paul?
Yeah, it is surprising that it took him this long. It's not surprising that he got the monkey off the back at Mid-Ohio, because every time he's won there, this is his third win now, I mean, he just lays the smack down on the field. And, I mean, that's his greatest strategy this weekend, is get in front and run away where he can't get hit.
Yeah.
Unless he caught up with lap traffic, which he probably wasn't too far from doing. I mean, there was nobody that was going to hit him this time.
He's becoming like the Star Trek movies. He's really good in odd years. Have you noticed that?
Oh, you just blew my mind.
Yeah, he's won.
Maybe that's it.
He's won the last 3 odd years in a row. So look for him to win again in 2013.
There you go.
I would not be surprised. Yeah, I don't think I haven't seen anything from him this year that would suggest that he that his skills are slipping or that he's lost a step. Or, you know, a lot of people say when you get married and have children, you don't tend to push as hard. I don't see that at all in any of the races I've watched him this year. It's just been, like you said, it's just this monkey and this bad luck, and things just keep happening to him that really are beyond his control. I don't think that, trying to think back over the year, and I don't think there's any situations that have been in his control where he's really thrown a race away. Unless I'm just drawing a blank, but I, you know, he got taken out at St. Pete. The crew ran him out of fuel at Indianapolis. He got taken out by Viso at Edmonton.
No, I was going to mention Indianapolis, but that was his team. That wasn't him.
Yeah, yeah. So I can't think of any off the top of my head where he it was his mistake that really cost him a chance at winning. So, he got behind early in the year again this year, just like he did last year. But he's continued to fight. He's put together a lot of good finishes, except for the ones where he really gets taken out for one reason or another. And I think you're starting to see that now in the standings. I think he's third place still, I think, and quickly closing on Power. So I think that
it's not that he's closing on Power. It's that Power is coming back toward him.
Yeah, probably. That's probably true to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dixon is almost 2 full races of points behind now. He said himself this past weekend that somebody asked him if this was the beginning of his resurgence, and he said that it would have to be a hell of a resurgence at this point.
Yeah, I think we can pretty much, you know, one more bad race for Power, you know, especially, well, I don't know, on a 1 mile oval, he might actually do, you know, perform pretty well this weekend on an oval. But I don't think Power can afford, certainly can't afford any more DNFs, and really can't even afford one more finish behind Dario, or he's going to quickly run out of time.
Well, if you look at it the other way, you can look at it as, well, if Dario has one bad race, then Power's right back in it. But the problem is that Dario never has one bad race.
I was going to say, Dario, a definition of a bad race for Dario at this point is not finishing on the lead lap.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's run every lap this year. He's on pace to do what Tony Kanaan did back in 2004, which we thought we would never see again. Now, does that mean the odds are going to play that eventually, or the percentages say that something has to happen to Dario sometime soon? I don't know. I'm not betting on it. You're not going to get a mechanical failure unless it's something completely freakish or like what happened to him at Iowa last year. But hell, even when the team runs him out of fuel, he still finishes on the lead lap in Indianapolis. So it's going to take something just absolutely beyond belief at this. What's Power down? Like 65 points now?
Somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yeah, something like that. So,
I think.
Yeah, so Dario could just sit there with his feet up on the pit wall for a race and still come out with a pretty good lead.
And you know, the thing is, too, Franchitti just has amazing luck, and you know, winners make their own luck to a large extent, you know, as they always say, but nothing bad happens to the guy in a race. You know, if there's a strategy, it works out in his favor. If there's any kind of delay or anything, any kind of yellow flag, it seems like it almost always pans out his way.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you know, if there's a 12 car incident, he comes out smelling like roses. It's crazy, but you know, that it's not, we look at it and say luck, but there's a large amount of talent and instinct and, you know, not to, but I guess intangibles that come into it. It's like, how does he do it?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he just keeps on going.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many times have we seen this year when a yellow flag has come out while Dario was on pit road?
Yeah. I know. It's bizarre, isn't it?
I mean, I think that's a microcosm. You think of how many times that's happened where he's been on pit road when the yellow flag came out.
Oh, yeah.
And then look what happened to Will Power this weekend, where twice he missed it by a matter of just a second or two.
Oh, that was a heartbreak, too. That changes the race right there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's, Oh, my gosh.
Especially when it happens twice. Yeah.
Well, is it time to ask the question, is Dario's dominance bad for IndyCar?
Well, that's the trick. You know, personally, I really admire where, you know, Dario's skill and talent and everything, but at some point you do kind of say, oh, okay, that's how it happened.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like if a movie has the same plot over and over again and the good guy, you know, wins out at the last minute over and over, I mean, you get in that sense that, okay, well, you know, this is going to happen again, just like it happened last time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is. I think if you get on Twitter and the end of a race or everything, you know, we wouldn't have the Death Star meme about Ganassi and Penske if there wasn't some frustration about the lack of winner's parity, I guess you'd call it. So, you know, that's something to consider, I guess. You know, I do get frustrated sometimes, especially because Dario sometimes, I've said this in his post-race interviews, likes to, it's like the guy who just won $1 million and he's mad because he gave it to him all in 20s. You know, he finds something to, perfect. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, right? Now bear with me for a second, but, you know, Clark Griswold finally gets his house all set and his father-in-law's like, the little lights, they aren't twinkling. You know, and that's kind of how I feel Dario is sometimes in his post-race interviews. And it's like, guy, you just blew away the field. Willpower is frustrated somewhere in 21st place. And you're going to talk about some partial blocking on lap 3. You know, it's like, yeah. Come on, man.
I got to tell you, you're such Paul's language calling on the National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation right there.
I think we just now have an untoppable podcast. I don't think we can ever top this.
Maybe I'd start cracking Christmas Vacation in the same podcast. Is that?
There you go. I don't know. I can argue both ways of this. I can understand why people would be bored that Dario kind of wins all the time. On the flip side of that, people need to realize that we're certainly talking about one of the greatest open-wheel drivers of our generation, if not in the history of at least the last 50 years of open-wheel racing. I mean, this guy, he's just that good, and he's just that good on every type of track. You know, you just have to realize sometimes you're seeing someone that is that good. On the flip side of it, how much of it is that it's Dario winning, that he's winning over and over and over again, and how much of it is the fact that it's Dario Franchitti himself that's winning over and over and over again?
I think the problem isn't that Dario Franchitti is winning over and over and over again. I think the problem is that nobody is giving him a run for it. I think if I absolutely agree with you that we're watching one of the greatest open wheel racers of our time. And I think that is the thing that I appreciate the most about this. People are going to look back on this era of open wheel racing and say, wow, he was just spectacularly dominant, and it was an amazing thing to watch, much in the same way that people were frustrated with Schumacher, but now he's legendary. Well, maybe not his current running, but when people think back on when he was just flat out dominant of F1, that's the way that they think about it, right? But I mean, the problem isn't that Dario is so dominant, it's that there isn't another dominant presence there with him to create a good strong rivalry and a good and make it look like he's working for it, I guess.
Well, you know, I think sports fans in general have an acceptance of dominance. You know, people hate the Yankees, but they still watch them. People hate, well, okay, nobody hates, okay, they do now, Tiger Woods. I mean, he dominated for 10 years, and people only showed up to watch him. And you see what happens when he disappears. I mean, they were there to watch him. You know, the Patriots. Okay, bad example of the Patriots. you know, but there is a level of acceptance of dominance. I think that more of the problem with Dario Franchitti is that the fans just don't connect with him. if this was Graham Rahal, if it was Danica Patrick, if it was, you know, people didn't complain when Sam Hornish Jr. was winning races by the bucket loads in the early part of the last decade. There's just an acceptance of him. I think that a lot of IndyCar fans are still somewhat jaded toward Dario Franchitti from his cool reception or his cool attitude toward the IndyCar series when he first came here a number of years ago. I think that there's just a general, not bitterness, but he just isn't warmly accepted by a lot of the fan base. And I think that has as much to do with this bitterness, I guess, or this fan base complaining about his winning all the time as the fact that he does win a lot. I mean, how many races has he won this year? Four? Three? Four? Something like that?
Four.
Okay. Well, Power, how many has Power won?
Three?
I think.
This is way off the top.
Yeah, it is.
Head.
He won at Toronto. He won at... No, not Toronto. He won at Edmonton. He won at Texas. He won at Sao Paulo.
Anyway.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's right there with Dario. It's not like Dario's won six races and nobody else has won more than one. I just have a hard time believing that people are upset solely for the fact that a driver, that driver X, is winning a lot of the races.
Well, I definitely think there's drivers in the field that if they were winning this much, you would not see as big a problem with it. I do think mm-hmm. there's something to maybe not connecting with Dario like we think we connect with other drivers. I mean, I think fans like to pretend that a lot of the drivers are everyman, you know, although most of the drivers probably grew up in far more well-to-do circumstances than most of us would consider, you know, in our own lives, and certainly different circumstances. But I think there's something that makes us want to connect with those guys a little bit more. You know, Dario, like you said, he was kind of aloof. He's got the celebrity wife and everything. He just seems a little bit apart. Whereas a Graham Rahal, although he's part of a racing tradition and definitely, you know, he's had his advantages and everything. We still see him. I think a lot of fans see him as a kid from Ohio, part of a tradition, part of a legacy, and that makes them want to connect with him more. You know, and I'm not going to say that one or the other is warmer or nicer or friendlier or, you know, but that's how I think fans want to see them. And I think that's the case with Graham or Ed Carpenter, you know, Dario, I mean, even TK, I think, has a certain amount of warmness that fans see, or character, however you want to put it, that would make them more receptive to dominance.
Fair enough. Let's close the door on Mid-Ohio, because we've got a few other topics that we want to cover before we wrap up tonight. Let's talk about the 2012 car and the pictures that we've seen these last couple of days. Initial thoughts?
I want to hear it.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. I've said over and over again, and I'm not a big fan of the appearance of the Dallaras. I'm just not going to be. I just don't like the appearance of the Dallaras. They don't design a car that meets my ideal aesthetic, but I don't care. I care how it performs. That's what matters to me, and we don't know any of that yet. So I really, I looked at the car, I went, eh. But I was expecting to do that, and that part really is secondary to me compared to, yes, how it sounds, but even how it sounds is not as important to me as what kind of lap times we're looking at, what kind of overtake ability we're looking at, and that sort of thing, and we're not going to find that out for a long time. So this is all really just you know, eye candy at this point to me, and it doesn't matter to me all that much.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I think a lot of people are just getting so hung up about the way it looks. I don't care what cars were out there. If any car made me feel about a race like I did about Mid-Ohio, I'm not going to like it. I don't care if you put a 94 Penske out there, which I loved. If it produces that same racing that I watched last weekend, I'm going to hate that car. And if I have a dump truck out there, that allows me to enjoy the racing, actually see some good passing, see the drivers actually look like they're
driving instead of just killing time, then I'm going to enjoy that then. What it looks like, I agree with you, Steph. I think that people are just focused on the wrong thing. I think they just are in this mood of nitpicking, probably because they didn't get what they wanted a year ago when they did the iconic selection. And they're just so caught up on the visual aspects of it. Is it the prettiest car? No, it's not. You know, but there are just things that need to be secondary, and performance needs to be primary among the concerns of this car. Performance and safety need to be primary concerns of this car. Not
absolutely. And the other thing that people are not taking into consideration is that when the aero kits do finally roll out, the car's not going to, they're not all going to look like this anyway.
Right.
This is just the Dallara iteration of it. So there's a lot of potential for difference in appearance that way too. I can't forgive my ignorance here. Is the side pod design part of the aero kit, or is it just the front and back wings?
The side pod should be as well.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a great deal of ability for variation when the aero kits get rolled out. So I really don't see the need to focus on this all that much. Zach, what do you think?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with you guys. I like the look of it a little bit better than you two, but I mean, I'm not. Again, to me, it's secondary. I think a lot of people are very excited for 2012, and I do think you have some people who are, you know, upset that either the Swift or the Delta Wing didn't get picked. So we're going to go through this ultra scrutiny. You know, there's a lot, understandably, riding on the 2012 car. So, I mean, anything that these guys see and anything that a fan sees is going to be just you know, picked over to death. And it's just going to be the way it is. And it's going to go through next year. And, you know, if the racing's not close in the first race or if the first tests turn out a certain way, it's just going to be the reality for the next year or so. I mean, it's just what we're going to have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe how many people are still bellyaching that there's an air scoop on the top, the air box.
Man, that is like prime contention.
I know. Geez, that car could be out there running 300 miles an hour, and people are going to complain that there's an air box on it.
Yeah, I don't get it. It's functional.
Yeah.
It's to cool the turbocharger, isn't it?
That's how they're feeding the air into the turbo. You got to get air in there, right?
So, yeah, I don't
know. Funny that the air boxes are okay on a Formula One car, but you put them on an Indy car and whoa.
Well, because back in the day, they had rollers.
Exactly.
And that's what people want. People want the 1993, 94, 95 cars back, and nothing else will do.
Yep, that's exactly what it is. People are stuck in 16 years ago.
Yeah, and I think we all need to open our minds a little bit. Okay, let's talk about the TV deal. That's really not a deal. I guess that reveals my opinion. I don't know. There's got to be a lot more to this thing that we haven't seen yet, because as far as it looks on the surface, nothing really is changing, and we're locked in for 6 years.
Yeah, I've heard that there's a little bit more fundage behind the scenes, but, you know, who knows exactly what those numbers are or, you know, what exactly was promised. I mean, I think what the press release talked about, increased publicity and communication or whatever, well, I mean, that would be slightly up from zero. So, I mean, at this point with ABC and ESPN, it's like, well, guys, unless you have a lot more than you've shown me so far, I'm just not sure where this is going.
Yeah. Paul?
I don't think it's quite as bad as people are looking at. Or I guess on the flip side, I don't know that the alternative would have been as good as people are dreaming it was going to be. If you're not on SportsCenter, what are you on? There's nothing. Versus or NBC Sports Channel, as it'll be known in January, they still haven't proven themselves to be a household commodity. You know, the same people that are complaining now that you were on ABC and not on the NBC networks and Versus are the same people that were complaining 3 years ago that we were going to Versus. you know, the yes, the game changed somewhat when NBC was purchased by Comcast, but we still don't know what Comcast is going to do with that. You know, is it? We don't know that NBC Sports Channel, 5 years from now, 8 years from now, we still don't know that that's going to be a channel that rivals ESPN. And as much as we want to complain about the coverage from ESPN, if it turns out that as Zachary mentioned, that there is this increased funding, whether it, you know, I think right now there it was at like $6 million a year. If that goes up to $8 or $9 million a year, you know, $3 million goes a long way toward helping IndyCar fund their series. I mean, $3 million is $3 million, however you look at it. And you still you have to have the SportsCenter exposure. IndyCar isn't at the place now where it has the luxury of being able to go off of SportsCenter, because if you're not on SportsCenter, the only coverage you're getting is about a 2-inch article in the USA Today.
Okay, I guess my problem with it wasn't even the fact that we were with ABC. I was surprised by that. You know, maybe NBC just, well, wasn't interested in what we're hearing here in bits here and there, is that NBC was actually trying to tell IndyCar that they weren't going to take the 500 unless it was moved to a different day, because there's a golf tournament that they have that day that they weren't willing to give up, which is sort of a really harsh reality check. But anyway, my issue was, when I looked at this, I said, okay, ABC was interested, made an offer, offered more money, that's great. I would have gone back to them and said, you know what, give us the same amount of money instead of more money, and give us more races on the network. Because to me, having the same number and having it only be five, including the 500, that's not a recipe for growth. We need to see more actual network exposure. So that would have been the way that I would have wanted to see the
marketing. But aren't some of the IndyCar, the ABC, ESPN, some of those are on ESPN now, aren't they? They're not all...
No, that was something with the way that one of the articles about the topic was written. If you actually go to the press release,
we have this year, 2011, does ESPN run races? Do they have it?
No. No, it's all on ABC.
All five of them are on ABC?
Yep.
It's ESPN on ABC.
Okay.
It's that little title that
right.
they use to designate.
Right, I thought ESPN channel itself actually broadcasts.
No,
no.
No. As part of the new agreement, ABC will be the exclusive broadcast network partner for the Izod IndyCar Series and will continue to televise four races each year in addition to the Indianapolis 500. The ESPN factor comes in because they get international syndication rights and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, basically, people were getting all worked up that NBC was going to be interested, and what it ended up being was that nothing has changed, and we're locked in for 6 years. Except that now we're going to be getting the in-car cameras on ESPN.
And maybe there is information that we don't know about yet.
There must be, because otherwise there's no way this is a good deal for IndyCar.
Well,
either that or things were that dire.
It's hard to say if they're making $3 million, $2 or $3 million extra a year. It's hard to say there isn't anything in this for IndyCar, though. But
if that's all it is, though?
But I think what would be important from a fan standpoint is we know that there is a clause in that says that, at least on the ABC races, that the in-car cameras will all be streamed live on ESPN3.com. If there's a clause in this contract that allows for online streaming even of practice or qualifying, I think that's something that could be looked at as a bright spot to this. Because like you say, Sid, I think there has to be more there than just a money difference.
There must be.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm hoping that there's a lot of promotional clauses in this contract that says, you know, we're guaranteed a minimum of, you know, 90 or 120 seconds on SportsCenter. You know, it's going to be interesting. How does Sports Center and ESPN handle IndyCar in the post Danica era?
Well, that's the big question. That's actually what I was going to bring up, because right now, you know, we're lucky to get Helio Castroneves won the race, Danica Patrick finished 16th, and that's not going to be an option anymore.
Right.
And I mean, how's that first race on ABC going to go next year? Are they going to bemoan the fact that Danica's not there and talk for half the race about the impact of Danica leaving? Because to me, ABC's coverage has not shown a proclivity for really digging deep at all into the series. And I think that's one thing that a lot of fans, I think they have the potential to do it. I think certainly they could bring some people around that could do it, but I don't think it's happening now. And I think that lack of, that lack of apparent passion for the stories of the series beyond this superficial layer that they give us, I think that's a big turnoff to your more hardcore IndyCar fan, that they don't feel that the series is being serviced like it should be.
No, I agree with that completely. Okay, we're running short on time, so let's move ahead to looking forward to Loudon. We mentioned already that Thomas Schachter is going to be in. That always adds a bit of spice to a race. We've also got Pippa Mann joining Rahal Letterman-Lanigan racing for the first time, and we'll be wearing the National Tire and Service Central Racing sponsorship on that car. So great to see Pippa get another shot, and of course, a lot of people will be following her to see what she can get done on this track. What do we expect to see? What are our predictions for this weekend?
I think Pippa's definitely got the ability to. Now, she's still a rookie, you know, so rookie things happen, as James Hinchcliffe at Mid-Ohio. But, I think she's got the talent. Rahal Letterman's proven themselves to be a good, fast team, so I think she definitely has the potential to have another strong finish here. So it's just going to depend on how well she keeps her focus and all those other little rookie things. This is going to be interesting. It's a mile oval. So does Marco charge back up? Or, this one's kind of wide open right now, to me, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Paul?
I think this is going to play out somewhat like a Milwaukee, but I think the configuration of the track is going to allow the racing to probably be even a little bit better than we saw there. I think in the end, though, you're kind of going to get the same old song and dance. I think you're going to see Dario perform very well. I think you're going to see probably Will Power and Elio perform pretty well. But I think this is the type of track where it looks like Andretti Green. Oh, did I just say Andretti Green?
Wow. Showing your age, Paul.
I think Andretti Autosport, I think they're going to show well this weekend. I just think it's going to play out a little bit like Iowa, where just the amount of banking is not going to make it that flat quite as much of a handling track as we saw at Milwaukee. I think it's that type of track where they can perform well. I will not be surprised to see Marco Andretti have a very strong weekend. And if I'm going to continue and say that it's somewhat like an Iowa in the way that it may drive, then you have to think that KV is going to be strong until they crash. I think Tony Connell will have a good weekend.
I'm going to stick my neck out and say that this is the one that TK does gives KV its first win.
I would not be at all surprised. KV ran very – or Tony ran very strong at Milwaukee. They ran very well at Iowa. Of course, Sato was on the pole and looked very good there. So I expect this to be a very competitive race. It'll be nice to have a brand-new track, as we said, that none of these guys have been to before. So it's kind of a bit of a clean slate. So hopefully we'll see some things mixed up, and I look for it to be a very, very good race. I really do, and I hope they have the support of the community there. They did not have good support when they were the last there 13 years ago, But another friend of More Front Wing, Dale Nixon, has said that they've really been doing a nice job advertising in the area. He says, you know, up to 4 hours away from the track, they've been running promotions for the event. So hopefully it's an area that at one time did a nice job of supporting IndyCar, and I hope the fans will return back again this year when they come back.
Okay, Paul, pick a winner.
Do I get to pick Dario, or do I have to?
Yeah. No, if you want to go the safe route, that's fine.
I feel a little bit like I'm chickening out if I pick Dario, but
yeah, you kind of are, but that's fine.
At this stage, he's just on such a roll that I wouldn't want to bet against him.
Zach,
man, you kind of inspired me with your KV talk there. I was all set to pick Dario, and now I'm kind of leaning towards TK. You kind of brought me around there.
Nice.
Yeah, you know what? Heck, let's throw the dice on the table. I'll go with a KV car. How about that?
Okay, so you're saying Kanaan then?
Yeah, pretty much. I just wanted to be polite about it.
All right, before you go, Steph, I'm going to revise mine already. I'm going to go out on a much thinner limb than that, than taking Dario.
You should know better than to change.
I know, but I'm going to make myself look even worse here and take a bigger risk.
Okay.
Ryan Hunter-Reay.
Ooh.
Wow.
No, but now Dario's going to win, you know.
Well,
that,
Dario's
right?
Probably going to win anyway, yeah. But yeah. I'm going to go out on the limb. I think Ryan Hunter-Reay is going to show what he can do on a one-mile oval again.
Very nice. All right. Well, on that note,
Who are you taking?
I said TK already.
Okay.
Wow. Getting touchy over there. He's up.
Just, yeah, why don't you take an easy road out? Want to make sure you got that in official.
No, I stuck my neck out early.
Okay.
That's why I made you guys make picks. All right, unless there's anything else we haven't touched on that you guys can think of, I think we're going to call it a day. Zach, thank you so much for joining us. It was great having you, nice animated discussion. We really appreciate your insight, and we'll definitely have to have you back sometime.
Oh, yeah, it was a blast. Thanks for having me, guys. Good time.
Great, and thanks to all of you at home for listening as well. And remember that morefrontwing.com is your source online for blogs, photos, podcasts, and more covering the IZOD IndyCar Series and beyond.